when was it that you got a strong interest in the Chinese language?
I got interested in P6, went to then to secondary school, and as I said, through my French teachers, and I was very inspired, did three languages day level. And I remember my mom and dad, because they were blessing me, they were like, you know, I was still helping with the O's on Saturday morning and the dosing and all the rest. But interesting, as time went on, my mom was very different. In the old days, she would have said to us and my dad, say, right, I need you out there. And it was like, go do it. But as they began to realize I liked the books more, my mom would have said, you kind of get your dad a wee hand there with the O's. So it was a whole change of tone. And I have to say, I really look back and I'm so grateful that I was born in the countryside and had them days in the hills with the wind howling and the beasts running like mad and getting in your bike and trying to get past them and closing all the gates and all your neighbours laughing at you and giving you a smile. And oh, it was great. And I remember the funniest thing of all, when you're sitting there in the back of a link box and the tourist, you see a French car. Now, of course, here I am someday with a mind to learn, you know, four languages, and the French would have said there, now they've seen these two wee snorty boys in the back of a link box, and I'd have, you shout out, bonjour, madame. Those farmers from Northern Ireland could speak our language. Anyway, so that was that. And then I suppose then I made the decision when I was about 17, 18, right, I need to leave Northern Ireland, I need to study Chinese. Mm-hmm. There was never at all north or south to do Chinese. I went to York, and you know, Yorkshire people are lovely people, very similar to your own. And that's when I did Chinese, of course, as my degree. But because I did linguistics, then I was able to use, you know, when we talked about pronunciation, phonology, semantic, all those things, different disciplines of linguistics, I was always the Ulster Scots sampling.
Yeah.
So our professor would have said, you know, you'd have written in the word, you know, H-E-A-D. So say that, and I says head. Now, of course, in the class, the Scotch people say head.
Mm-hmm.
The English people said head. He says, William there's got, he's got a completely different set of vowels. So every time I spoke, they were, and the weird thing was, I wasn't aware of it. See, we think that inverted commas, you talk while abroad, but there's times that our standard English is changed, like now. Either there's words in Northern Ireland we all kind of know, like now, where we are actually, our Ulster Scots has changed our standard pronunciation. So even though we think we're speaking more standard, the truth is, still outside Northern Ireland, it's still a variant, it's still a dialect.
It's like when you are, especially place names like England.
Yes,
England. We never say England. It's England and Scotland.
That's right.
So you're never pronouncing your D's, and you were talking about words earlier on you had noticed,
It's, well, I learned the science behind that. See, I knew you said finger and camel and any words there with an N and a D together. Now, I was only until I learned linguistics that they said, oh, there's called home organic consonants.
Uh-huh.
So consonants that are made around the same part of the mouth and the nose, that those sounds tend to, in Ulster Scots, rhyme together. And then, of course, you have the ch sound, like lach.
The guttural.
The guttural, which we... But the thing about that is, this is fascinating. I don't know if it's Herbison or somebody else, but you know, we would say a little there, and we use a glottal stop. Now, the glottal stop is very interesting because, of course, across the rest of England and all, Scotland, they talk about this. But there was some research done years ago that in Coleraine, of all places, that young girls, and this is we're talking about the 80s, young girls felt that if the men that they fancied used a glottal stop, like, oh, there, a little there, that was more sexy. So I said that was the funniest thing ever read.
Went for a bursary to that.
For being very sexy. So that was my kind of first, and then I suppose the boy says to me, what are you doing for your dissertation?
Uh-huh.
And I says, could I do about Ulster Scots? He says, yeah, I think that would be great. So my dissertation title was Some Common Linguistic Features of the Ulster Scots Community. Now, Anne, bear in mind, I was writing this, there's no board Ulster Scots, there was nothing. But I knew there was Herbison and various others, a handful of people that had been collecting rhymes and stories and all the rest. So it paid me to get some of the information. But the thing that was me, I interviewed those 11 people of all ages, and that was magic. That's where I captured the voice of people now long since departed, you know.
Aye. And that must have been really enjoyable.
Oh, it was great. I asked him a whole, a tear of questions, you know, if you have a female child, she's your doctor. Uh-huh. And of course, you know, daughter. Things like, you know, what you call water in a hole, shuck. Then things like about your finger, you know, how you say it. So I would make these sentences where they'd finish the sentence. And then I would say to the men, the free conversation. And that's where I talk about ledger, talk about farming. Because I knew if people could talk about what they'd grown up as, they could speak more freely. Mm-hmm. And that's when, you know, you had boys saying stuff that was just, you know, that was powerful stuff. It was just the Limpet story is to me, that is a cracker. And, you know, John Dee and these, it was a queer thing to listen to because you listened and you tuned in and you got lost in it. It was just great.
It's like Gunty. I always find it interesting, Gunty Armoyer Day.
Yeah.
I think they're just the kings and queens of the Ulster Scots language. Charlie Gillan. I listened to Charlie Gillan. I was actually listening to a podcast his yesterday. Unbelievable the way he uses the words, you know. And funny when you were saying about a doctor there, and my grandad and granny, who were at the Carrots Road, they would attack where a lot of folk would say a lass and a wee fla.
A wee fla, that's right.
But my grand attacked about a weechel.
A weechel.
Uh-huh. And a wahizzy.
That I never heard that.
So the girl was a wahizzy.
Wahizzy.
And the boy was a weechel. But obviously that's a small child. But then as they grew, he would have just says, he's a queer lump, a weechel.
That's right.
He's just getting bigger,
Back to Ballum, so I remember one of the old fishermen there, Mackay's, always met my dad, and he always says, then wee boys are getting big, which is just pure, you know.
Even they'll still say, of course, I's a wee.
That's right,
of course, I's a wee.
I think that's the thing. It's a very, obviously, if you study it, there's bits go back to old English and old Northern Scots, and I think it's very colourful. So I suppose when I had these people, and then of course when I had these people together, I began to see that the younger generation, my youngest informants were under 10. They were like 9 and 10, sorry, and in those days, and they would have switched, they would have moved, they would have said some things, and then they'd have, because the pressure of school was there. And then I saw people in the middle who were my generation, and they could switch, and there are some things, you know, I think there's a humour and there's a mentality that even if it's not necessarily specialised Ulster Scots words, I remember taking my mum and dad had their wedding anniversary, and lo and behold, they decided to invite the whole neighbours and all in to come to ours to have a barbecue. All the neighbours there, and it was a queer gathering. I mean, there were people there. You know, it's like a funeral without anybody did. You know, it's one of the, everybody's got a good
turnout.
At a funeral. We're all sitting there, and a great thing. A lot mentioned the man's name is gone now, but he shouts out, his daughter shouts out, no, do you want a hot dog? And I've never seen a hot dog in his life. And he's, you know, what's that? And he's a farmer from the shore, you see. And the daughter shouts back, no, it's a sausage in the bath. Oh, I guess you're not there. So it was just a hilarious moment, right? I bust a laugh and I couldn't, because it was just a natural, you know.
As I may say, I sometimes look at the language and I think about the language. I love Ulster Scots language. And being reared with it, you can't even miss but see the enjoyment of it, you know. And it's one of the things I used to laugh at was, if you and me was down the street and we had no dather for years, they're corn big.
That's right.
And then if you fail it, they're not as big as they were. But your size hasn't changed at all.
That's not our size.
And I used to be trying to maybe explain it to folk. Yes. And I find that difficult. Did you ever find that?
They're well big.
Oh, they're short.
Well, I had that. Well, big. Strange enough, I had that on the opposite. I had the Chinese problem.
Aye, that's what I was going to.
I lived in China for a year and I came back and life had, you know, after a feed of my ma's scone bread after a week, I was itching to get back. And I would have then used words that were Chinese words. For example, there's a great word in Chinese, it's called mafan. It means it's like a lot of trouble. I don't want to give you any trouble. I'm a fan. It's a wild lot of my fan. So when we were living there, we had often used that word in English. Do you want to go down to the train station and get a ticket? No, it's a wild lot of my fan. No way. So I was using this word, my fan. My mom didn't know what I was talking about. And she said something like, do you want to go down there? And I said, no, it's not. I do I do that there. It's a wild lot of my fan. And of course, I forgot she didn't know what that was. And I think there's words like that. That are just yin word that can really describe something better than another's, you know.
I find that the Ulster Scots language is sometimes quite an insulting language.
Aye.
You know,
like slicking.
You're a gape and you're slicking and you're a gulping. So there's a lot of insulting words, you know.
But they're not crude. I don't think it would be crude language.
No, it's not crude. Definitely not crude language.
It would be.
I think that if you're a true Ulster Scots speaker, you can now get the funny side of it. Isn't that the way? And do you find that the Chinese language is in any way insulting or?
Oh, aye. The biggest swear words, which I won't say on the recording, are actually not very. If you translate them, they're not swearing at all.
Right.
But in the Chinese context. Now, you said there about a while ago about they're wild big. And one of the things in Chinese culture is if you know somebody very well, you will say things very directly. And I'll tell you a funny story. In the last month, I've had two comments that from an English person are coming out of place. I went to a party and my mate was there with this Chinese girl that kind of half knew me. And she said, "Oh, you are very handsome." And I didn't know what, I wanted the grin to open up and swallow me up. I didn't know where to look at all. And I think the boy beside me was an Irishman. He was like, "Jeepers, what does that mean?
What's going on
now,
here?"
Now, I knew that what she was doing was only, in Chinese, you could say that without being, like you're not, hitting on somebody, you're not being very, rude or very, But then the same week actually, someone hadn't seen me for a long time. He says, "Boy, you got wild fat." And I can, for a split second there, I could have felt him. Talk about a gulp, and I said, "There's a gulp there. Have you ever seen you?" But the thing is, I realised then that was because he knew me very well. And friends could say things. Now, that's funny because generally speaking in Chinese culture, you will go 10 laps to avoid offence.
Right.
I remember taking the way people to Ulster Hall. We were doing a show there and I was in charge of getting all the lights and all that there. And I've been writing these boys in China and they were used to perform in front of millions, They got the Ulster Hall and there's Ulster Hall's a couple thousand. So he came in and he looked at the lights and I said to him, "What do you think?" I said in Chinese to him, "What do you think of the setup?" And the first thing he did that, he kind of breathed in.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that's a bad sign. When they breathe in, it's a bad sign. Now the thing is, because I was the boss, and he was my guest to performer, he couldn't tell me what he said directly because we didn't know each other.
Right.
So the way he said it was, he said in Chinese, "Jiga butai li xiang," it means this is not very ideal.
Right.
And that is the polite way of saying it's absolutely crap.
Can you tell me that again in Chinese?
It's not very ideal. And I'll tell you a funny story about that word ideal. I remember the day I learned that word. I talk about a strange word. I was in a classroom in China and the morning I learned the word li xiang, ideal. The afternoon I went to the library and I did my hymn work and I was writing all these sentences here and Jiga butai li xiang, not very ideal. And then in the evening, I says, "Right, I'm going out for a wee scoot here in the bike." And I got the bike and lo and behold, the tire is a bit soft in the back. So over China, there was all these old men, or retired men, and they had a wee bench and they had a sat with a pump. And you'd pay them 50p or something and they would have pumped your bike up and checked or repaired the tire. So I stopped and I knew the guy. I called him La Dai, it's like old grandfather, which is a very respectful term. "I say, how are you?" "Oh, not too bad." The old, so what's the crack kind of thing. And he said, "Dad, could you help me a wee bit and pump her up?" So he looked at the tire and he says, "That tire is not ideal." So, and the same way, see if you go to the doctor there and you say to him, "You have bad eyesight." you wouldn't say, well, you could, but you wouldn't say, oh, doctor, maize are not that good. I need to, can you look at them?
Uh-huh.
In Chinese, you'd say, doctor, my eyes are not very comfortable.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a very, very, it's a very indirect, a very polite way of, you know, uh-huh. So I remember being corrected by somebody. I translated it as an hospital.
Not very comfortable.
And I would have said, I said more professional, there, this man is saying that he has a weakness in his sight. Mm-hmm. And I said to professionally, you know, the words for it. But his family has, his eyes are not very comfortable. so I just
thought. But do you know, it's funny, because when I knew it was coming to hear chat with you, I did look up a wee bit of Chinese.
Good for you.
But it was just, I wanted to say hello, and uh-huh. they didn't actually say hello.
No.
So I was like, oh my goodness, I wanted to say hello to William in Chinese. But I did see that, what I learned, I said to you earlier, was ni hao ma. So ma is you.
So
is that right?
You say ni hao is your basic, ni is you, and hao is good. So you good.
And you can say
it to everybody. Now, if you say ma at the end of it, that's the second sentence. You can say, and how are you doing? Ni hao ma. And in that case, then you have to reply by saying, and this is another thing in Chinese, you always say, I'm very good. You never say, I'm bad.
Right.
You say, wa hen ha, I'm very good.
Wa hen ha.
So often in a meeting, people will come in, and that's the kind of everybody, hello everybody.
And it just sounds like.
I remember my first time I spoke Chinese was in a takeaway in Bushmill. I came in, and I know the man, he's still alive, he's retired now, Vincent, his name was, Vincent Lau, and he was he owned the takeaway for years in Bushmill. I came in and I spoke to him. Now, he didn't speak Mandarin, he spoke Cantonese. So I'm looking at him saying, how are you there? And how's the food? And I said, I'm really hungry tonight. And there's all this prepared. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at me and he's giving me a funny eye. And I said to myself, the boy's going to be pressing the panic button. He's probably going to think I have too many pints of Bushmills down my throat. So anyway, eventually kind of half smiled and he said, you speak Mandarin? I said, yes. And then I knew enough Cantonese to say, sorry, I don't only speak Mandarin, I only speak a wee bit of Cantonese. They laughed and we became good friends, Vincent.
And because that was another thing I learned while looking at it. There, I thought Chinese was Chinese.
Nope.
This man speaks Chinese. Nope. Then my daughter totally says different. To me, oh, mummy, you learned that in what, Mandarin or Cantonese? Right. I says, oh, I don't know. I just learned.
Leho.
She says, oh, but. Well, this fella speaks Cantonese, and I thought, oh dear. So there's
Leho is ni hao is Mandarin,
uh-huh.
And Leho is the and if you
so could I still
away,
say Leho ma,
you could, uh-huh. But the thing is, forget about the ma, the problem with saying ma is they'll have to reply to you with a sentence,
okay,
which you'll understand,
right?
And you'll be smiling away and nodding the head like Malayo. Now, the thing is, you say ni hao is better.
Uh-huh.
Or Leho,
uh-huh.
And then that's the greeting. That's how are you?
Mm.
Now I always teach the Wayans. I say, now the way you do it is knee, and I say tap your knee,
uh-huh.
And then the how you put your hand up. You know, the Native American. I said, the only thing is when you're going to tell me, don't be making those signs. the guy think you're going mad. So that's kind of where we're at, and I suppose.
It's really, I just obviously got a touch on it because I knew I was coming to see you, and I mean I found it interesting, and the only place. To my sadness, I could go to was Google.
That's right.
Because I thought, where do you find? Used to be you could go to the library and get a book or something.
Well, listen,
the
Ulster Scots Community Network, where we sit this very minute, you look out that window there, now you'll see our project. We've got English and Chinese, and I would hope to. I was saying there to the boys in Ulster, I said David there, that the Ulster Covenant was signed at the Rotunda. Now that's down the road in the City Hall. And I would say it would be great if people could come out here, and then when they get here, they see the Chinese and the English. And we've done the whole thing, people know a place in English and Chinese. And my heart would be to, for the Ulster Scots community, I would say, you see my poster, didn't they be gulpins? Be kind to your and be good to your neighbours. And the Chinese community have nothing against you. And they have, in fact, as you know, they've been serving you for years, making this food that we
lovely
like.
Lovely food.
And just be there for them. And a smile, I would say to people, a smile is the easiest thing you can do. Just be kind. if you see him, we spot a baller there, maybe local parliamentaries, then, you know, be a supportive, be there and support them and make them feel welcome. And the same for not just the Chinese, any community. Because at the end of the day, we're all from somewhere.
And obviously you went there.
I went there.
Not knowing what was in front of you. And obviously they've been good to you.
Very good to me. And I would say that's where we're at. At the end of the day, there are a lot of things the Chinese community and Ultra Scots people share.
Aye.
Hard work was a thing that built the Ultra Scots community when they came here and they went to America and all the places, as you can read about here in the network and the books that the agency make as well. And the second thing would be is migration. You know, there were reasons the Chinese first came here because the British government were looking for people to work.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way the black folk came in the Windrush, they came because there was a labour shortage and the British Empire in them days looked out to the world. And we had been to those places and we had colonised them and we made them our own. And I suppose, and it's interesting, a lot of Chinese people still feel an affinity towards England in a funny way because... Now, I'm saying that, don't ever talk about the Opium War, because when we get in that, and that was the worst thing ever. But so I think keeping the mind open and if anything we would learn on would be we're more than just one layer. I mean, when I went to England and I says I'm William from Northern Ireland, he said, "Oh, you're from Ireland." I am not from Ireland. Of course, I was very, very, very thick about that, and stubborn.
I'm saying that.
But then what happened is I spent more time there with the people. I realized when I was with Irish folk, we had stuff in common. We had a culture and a heritage that was bigger.
Mm-hmm.
The jokes we laughed at and those kind of things. So I suppose for me, that's when I came back here, and I mean, the Troubles, of course, were still on them days, and there's still that identity stuff going on. But the thing is, if you open your mind, just because you let stuff in doesn't mean other stuff blows out.
No,
you can be bigger and you can be richer. And I think we need to be those kind of people with a big mind that's open.
And I know that. I would always think a language is part of who you are, very Absolutely. Much your identity. Exactly. So with the three languages, because you obviously speak standard English as well.
That's right.
And you speak
Korean and all kinds.
Oh, Korean, do you? Can you kind of, with Chinese and Ulster Scots and English, can you find yourself sort of trained to them
all? No problem.
When I'm
talking Chinese, I'm thinking in Chinese, and to me it's as natural as anything.
And when you are talking in Chinese, are you like in that culture when you're talking? And then when you're Ulster Scots, obviously you're in your own culture.
This might be very right. I say if you want to really speak a foreign language of any kind, if you go to Spain or anywhere at all, you kind of go there with a mindset, I'm trying to speak this wild foreign language.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be quite hard for me. So you start there and you're starting off this fear. But what happens is any good language is you learn to act, because most of our language is acting. So for example, if I was an Ulster Scots community, I'm talking to there, you know, Jimmy Dunbar, some fellow there, a farmer, my body language will reflect that conversation. There'll be certain body, you know, rubbing the beard, or there'll be certain things there. I'm not saying it's an Ulster Scots thing, it's a country thing, perhaps. So when I was in China, I got into a bus one day and I said in standard Chinese, "I would like to go to the train station." And the taxi driver looked at me, "It's a taxi, I beg your pardon." And I thought, oh, jeepers. I could just hear him thinking out loud, "Oh, jeepers, oh, here's another foreign." Don't understand a word that boy will say. So his mind was closed. I said to myself, I spoke perfect Chinese. I got my tones right. Every word was clear. Why did he not understand me? And I thought to myself, maybe it's racism. I thought, no, maybe it's not. So I did an experiment. The next day I get into the taxi, and it wasn't necessarily him again. I jumped in the back of the taxi, never even looked at him, shouted out, fast in Chinese, "Right, boy, get me out of the train station. You know, as quick as you can." And he's driving along, and I could see him looking in the mirror, and he's putting on a very funny face. He says, he's in Chinese, he says, "Ooh," he says, "you're a foreigner."
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he knew that when I got in,
uh-huh.
but I didn't know it, because what happened is I filled him by the way I carried myself.
Uh-huh.
And the way you carry yourself, when I speak Chinese, I almost think I have to be Chinese. I mean, I don't even my facial expressions or body language. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just ways of, and you know, I wouldn't be very demonstrative in Chinese because Chinese people are not very gestural like Italians. So if you're in Spanish or French, you've got to watch what the people are doing when they're not speaking. And that's how you, because that will give you confidence in. Uh-huh. And they're looking at what you're saying, but 70% they're looking at what you look like. And that's where it's all coming in.
You see, I notice, and I say, I heard different folk speaking Ulster Scots. And maybe it's on a radio, maybe it's a TV, whatever. And it's like they're nearly ready to announce the Ulster Scots word coming up. And I'm thinking, there's no way the folks falling for that. Like, that's a lost cause. So it's probably something the same. But, and it's like the different dialects. Uh-huh. I'm going to Donegal, strong Ulster Scots speakers completely speak completely different to me. But good Ulster Scots speakers. And again, they're brought up at Monaghan, has a school that I would go to. And the Wayans, oh my goodness, they're just mad about who they are because they're Ulster Scots. Right, okay. So I find that, and as you go in the country, but as you say, it is the body language. And I could probably get up and dare yarn an Ulster Scots because that's just me. Mm-hmm. And I would do, oh, who can I do? Trying to get up to the Octway, and folk are like that. Then other folk tend to use, it's the wee words.
Aye, that's fair enough.
They'll put in the wrong place.
Oh, right.
I listened to a person young time, and I can't even remember what it was. It was a brief while ago. But straight away, I picked up on the N-word he was saying, because somebody in the programme says, well, what way are you?
Right.
Says, I'm not twa bad. And I went, oh, aye. That twa is two, the number two.
Aye.
Whereas he was using twa. Right. And I thought, oh, dear, that's so wrong.
Aye.
But, and you do get... So I think if you're in Chinese, you head off to a tea or whatever language you're speaking, the exact same as Ulster Scots. Yeah. But I think that you have to be aware of them wee words that you think, oh, tea, twa. I'm not twa.
My mum would say, give you twa soaps for tea.
Uh-huh.
But you're quite right. I say,
or twirthy soaps.
Aye.
Uh-huh.
I would say different too. Even English has a different too. Are you right? I think you have, I think if you're in that flow, it's easy enough.
Right into it.
Remember, for years we've been told not to talk like that. So you've got this thing going where even now, without, I'm trying my best, but if I was sitting in Bushmill having this conversation with you, or if I was sitting in the middle of a pretty field with this conversation, it would even be easier. And there's a few neighbours around and we could talk like that, then it would all come out because then you've got that encouragement and you're supposed to. But I have to say now, since I started this and I focused this year with Chinese New Year and Ulster Scots Agency, working with them, it's been easier for me to, I'm finding myself, as even in the car, I was thinking there, I mean, weeks ago I was driving along and I was thinking, and I started talking to myself, and Ulster Scots, the thing you do when you're, maybe it's easy. And it's easy enough, it was very naturally, it's just a wee bit, it's below the surface, it hasn't been, It's like a drill up here. It needs to be dug up a wee bit.
Up at the top a wee bit. I would go into boardrooms sometimes, and everybody in them will speak perfect standard English, and it's nearly as if they're waiting for me to come in. And I think, oh no, here we go. They're waiting. Do I speak to see what way I say it? But folk will say it, they feel comfortable enough now saying it to me.
Aye.
Say that again, and say one to sell, and I say one to sell. And if they're Frey England or wherever, they'll say, it's one to seal.
Mm-hmm.
I said, no, it's not. It's one to sell. It's you not saying it right. But, and you know what?
Well, that's the big mistake, the right and the wrong. The first lesson we learned in linguistics, I remember as clear as a day, he wrote it on the board. In linguistics, we cannot be prescriptive. So you cannot say to anybody, don't say it like that. And people used to come back, my family and my relatives and my friends would have said to me, he said, William, you're a funny boy. When you talk to us, you can talk like that. And then you talk to them people there and your foreigners and they talk about it. You see, but that's the acting. Uh-huh. I'm a chameleon because that's the way I'm made. I tune into people. And so if I'm back then talking to a mechanic in Bushmilla about we, even my kids, you say, Dad, when you were talking there to the mechanic, there was you got wild broad. I says, well, there's two words of thinking, there are two lines of thinking. I says, first of all, I was taught abroad because I could. and I understood it. And I said, secondly, he's a mechanic, going to charge you. So if he feels like you're not some kind of low end or whatever, he might not stick the knife in. So I said to myself, that's, and so there's a bit of an economic reason for doing that as mm-hmm. well. But that's the natural thing. You try to build mm-hmm. bridges with people. And I say, you know, when I meet people of all cultures, I'm trying to find the wee bridge there to
build up.
And I think with the Ulster Scots community, I think we have that in there. We just need to do it there, you know.
And we hit his say to you, but when you come home, just before you go, and you were sitting at your ma's table.
Sitting at my ma's table. I'd just been in China for 6 months. Jimmy, the pigeon man, had picked us up at the airport, and Jimmy's sitting there, and my maddie's hand-cut chips, you know, all sitting tapping for Mike a table, you know, those ones. And you sometimes you just be buttered to bread on the table.
Get them in her house, yeah.
Oh, you were die. And then it fell off the dog goat on the ground. So Jimmy says, what's it like? And of course, Jimmy had three questions. What's the weather like? What are the food like? What's the toilets like? The moment Jimmy had finished that, it was back to pigeons. So my ma was sitting there, and I was very glad to be home and all. And my ma, I knew my ma was soaring in the back of me, you know, in front of me. And I thought, my ma was looking at me. So I had a wild, mischievous, devilish thing in me. So I had a cup of tea in my hand. I hadn't started to drink it yet. And I lifted a cup of tea like this here. I knew my ma was looking at me, and I shook the hand just about to spill out. And I took it way slowly, like I had some wrong there, I had a few pints in me. And I drank the tea. My ma looked up, her eyes were like saucers. And I again, you hear her thinking out, my poor boy's been in China and haven't fed them or anything like that there. And I just laughed. I said, ma, I got you there. We had a core laugh at that.
He's drunk, done.
Oh, he thought, sure, I was done. Exactly. And we had a core laugh at that. So,
languages is just, it's great. There's something else, aren't they?
Well, they are. That's how we communicate. That's our soul and that's our identity. So I think if you suppress it, then there's a wee bit of constipation there. You need to let that out and be who you are. And as I said before, we can be a lot of people. You don't throw one out, you're just layers of who you are. Uh-huh. And tomorrow I'll be speaking, I'll be at a conference and I'll not be speaking Ulster Scots unless I meet somebody else. Uh-huh. There's a few Ballymoney ones coming. I might see if they
maybe
are.
Maybe you better speak Ulster Scots.
I better give them a custom word to see if they understand.
Well, it depends what bit of Ballymoney they come from. You know, because some of them will probably not know Ulster
that's
Scots.
That's true.
We had a lot of outsiders in Ballymoney now, which changes things this week.
Sure,
and
sure.
Funny, I went to Porta Boogie, very much speak like ourselves, you know, mm-hmm. and sadly for them at that time, because they were a good fishing industry and they were all able to converse with each other. And then people from other countries just come in. And lo and behold, the folk from Porta Boogie has kind of changed the way they talk so that these other folk understand them. And the language is nearly away. So I think it's always important to keep your language alive.
Yeah,
unearth the words, promote the words,
and
talk it.
That's right. Amen to that.
Thank you, Wally.
No problem. Thanks, Alan.